This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Koberger's statement went to the New York Times on a Sunday night, and he filed his petition on Monday. And surprise, surprise, I find this interesting. A new three-part Netflix documentary is being dropped today, actually, out there about Koberger. It's very, very victim focused. It's not super focused on him. The director even said that himself. I'm wondering about the timing here. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author with myself, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. Siobhan, what's your thoughts on that? He has a community. He has the pro-burgers that he's seemingly communicating with, or at least getting information in from, and people saying, we believe in your innocence and all that bullshit. I'm wondering, on the timing here, do you think he saw, okay, there's an, how, I guess the question is, how much do you think he's monitoring media around him from behind bars on a tablet or whatever access he has? And then how much is he choosing his plays based on the kerfuffle out there in the environment about him?
Yeah, it would make perfect sense. What else is he doing, you know, other than monitoring what everybody is saying about him? And with this documentary coming out, which I hadn't heard of, but the timing is very suspect that he wants his version of the story out there. So people are focused in on him again, and he can be the, you know, the unjust, you know, unjustly accused hero here.
And probably, Tony, I'm going to throw my own conjecture in there too. You know, with this special coming out, I haven't watched yet. I know you.
Me either.
Watch.
No.
We watch all the things that are horrendous on Netflix.
it's viewing for to go to bed to tonight for me. But
yes, you know. But I'd imagine part of that is because the Gonsalves's completely eviscerated him at his sentencing, and they didn't play the victim; they made him the victim in that. I imagine that. I don't think he premeditates anything. I think he's too much of an idiot to be able to do that. I think he's just reacting to the world around him as that broken brain of his does. I think this is the way he's just reacting. It's like, hey, it's them. Oh, I got to get them. You know, I think it's just a reactionary. He found out about the special, and this is just him going at it as soon as he found out about it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not all about him, I mean, it makes you wonder. I mean, I highly doubt he got a screener of it. You know, like, hey, check out this new doc that's about you. But it does make you wonder what's going on in his mind now that half, you know, more than a year has passed since his sentencing and his guilty plea. How, when you've written The Minds of Mass Killers, Siobhan, let's talk a little bit about these minds. Let's talk a little about these minds and how they react after the show is done, after the court drama is done, which I'm still surprised he didn't go to trial for, considering the attention that it would garner. But now he's saying he was bamboozled and he was railroaded into this and whatever, and his family, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of thoughts there. How often do we see people in this situation, mass killers, decide that the narrative that they went down, that I did this or I'm found guilty, whatever, and then decide, you know what, I don't like that narrative anymore. I'm just going to change it up. Is this common in the world of mass killers?
I don't think it's common for someone to plead guilty and then come back and say, oops, you know, that was all wrong. I didn't mean it or whatever. We've got a different story now. But they do like attention and they like the focus on them. And often what we've seen with quite a few of them, I mean, like Henry Lee Lucas, they'll come up with victims, you know, a list of victims that keeps expanding because it's more and more attention and, you know, giving the interviews, getting the books written about them, which I think they get this really perverse pleasure in. So I think the attention seeking is the common piece.
Yeah. And that's what my theory on with Rex Heuermann is, you know, he's using information as his only currency left to keep the attention on him, kind of like BTK did. You know, Dennis Rader, don't want to give him the props for, you know, the BTK title, but they're able to then trickle out when they felt that attention was waning. And since Coburg didn't have time to develop into a serial killer, there was no more information to give. Right. So the only way he can keep that attention is do things like this. And my conjecture on it is, had that book, Broken Plea, not be written, we wouldn't be talking about this right now, because it gave him fuel. It threw some kerosene on the fire that was burning. He goes, oh, let me latch onto this. And I love our listener put in there, attention whore. That's another good one for the day.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Siobhan, what is the kindling? What is the kerosene that goes on this fire? I mean, obviously you have books, you have, you know, people talking about, you have us, admittedly, we talk about the case. You have family members that still feed him, that still put $150 basically weekly into his canteen. I saw the receipts on that, literally the actual receipt. There's a lot of ways that the monster is being fed, not just through Snickers and ramen, but mentally, from people that are writing him letters. We believe in your innocence. There are certain things you're not going to be able to control in the environment. You're not going to be able to control the world and people who want to connect to a serial killer and think that he's innocent. That's going to exist. It is what it is. But let's talk about mom a little bit. Because mom's still feeding him. Mom's still putting $150 in little Bry's commissary every week, at least according to the receipts that we saw, allegedly. Is it time to stop? Is it time to say no more? You know, it's not snack time for little Bry anymore. He murdered 4 students. When you see the grotesque, horrendous nature of the crime, you're still on the other side of that mom going, here's some money for fruit snacks. Mm-hmm. Look, I people support their children. I understand that to a certain extent. But at what point is the bar where you just go, I'm not doing this anymore? Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. and I think, I mean, I have no problem speaking up and saying this is bullshit. I'm done. Yes, Mary Koberger, you're a victim too, 1,000%. But you're also getting into the lane of enabling at this point.
Because now
he's citing you publicly, saying that you're supporting him and his innocence. And if you're supporting him and his innocence, and I know it's your little boy who's been nothing but a fucking hellion to you your entire life, and you've not seemingly been able to accept that, or maybe you kind of have and kind of haven't. I mean, what do you say to that, to someone who's still filling the canteen so we can go get fruit by the foot in the commissary? I mean, what is that?
I think your word enabling was perfect, and how much enabling was happening throughout his life, which contributed to the narcissism and mm-hmm. these other pathological things we're seeing. Not that I'm saying she's responsible for it.
No.
But this is not helping. This is not helping. And I would love to be her therapist and explore, what is this about and why do you feel the need to do this? Because as I always do, I try to put myself, what would I feel like if I had a kid who, you know, was a serial killer? I mean, time to detach, time to let go, time to say, you made your bed here. And I think for my own psychological safety, I would need to say, cutting the ties.
His bedroom at home is still completely intact?
Probably.
Waiting for Brian.
Good question.
I bet it is.
I'll bet it is.
And she needs you a lot more than she needs Rex Heuermann's therapist.
I mean, what is somebody... I can't put myself there, so I'm trying to have as much empathy as I can, and I have for the last however many years this has been going on for. But after I saw the receipts of $150 a week in the commissary, and he's already raking in a bunch of money from his idiotic supporters out there, it's not like he's desperate for the money to get his Snickers. What is the purpose of doing is this a mom doing this for herself because she feels some sort of guilt of not standing by the thing of goo that came out of her body that turned into Brian Koberger? I mean, or what the hell is that? And what sort of permission does a person need? What sort of hill do they have to get over, especially in a bond like that between a parent and a child? Because that's, you know, one of the strongest bonds that will ever exist. And I get it. It's a fucking hard one to break, without a doubt. But anything can break. I mean, at what point, what does somebody like that need to hear or need to come to the realization of to say, it's okay for me to walk away from this?
Yeah, yeah. I think the word guilt nails it. And this is a person, I'm guessing, who this has kind of been her style in life, to feel overly responsible for other people. And I think all parents, to some degree, all good parents, we feel like we have an obligation to raise good kids. And she may be carrying a tremendous amount of guilt for how did I raise somebody that has had the problems he has, and so I've got to fix it, I've got to make amends somehow. And that's what would be explored in her own therapy. I think Sue Klebold, Dylan Klebold, the Columbine Killers, one of them, mother, wrote a wonderful book that goes into her head and how much guilt. I think she was a great mother from everything that.
What's the name again, Siobhan? I want to write that one down. That's a really good one for her to read.
Sue Klebold, and I don't remember the name of her book, but right. Yeah, easy to find. And it really goes into the thinking of somebody who was a good parent that produced a horrendous kid. And I think guilt is a huge issue for them.
And I'm curious too, because we saw this, well, we're seeing this with Asa Ellerup, who she doesn't seem to have this ability to see Rex as one person. She says, well, I got to get to know the other person. And so she still sees like him as bifurcated. Oh, I just know the good family man. I mean, no, it's just one person. This is one horrendous human being. Do you think in these cases with moms that have kids that do these horrendous things, do they see them as bifurcated? In other words, I know guilt is playing into this most likely. Again, don't know what her going on in her head, but do you think that she is sending money to her little boy and she refused to accept that bad part of him is still there? Or in other words, is she bifurcating the human being rather than accepting the whole?
Yeah, that's brilliant insight, because I think that's exactly what happens. Folks who do that, my kid, the one that we did the birthday parties when he was growing up, and you know, we did all these family activities and he was such a good little boy, could not be this other person. And so there is that splitting that goes on, which I don't think, I mean, it's a survival mechanism. Sure. I can see understanding to do it for a time, but I think overall the healthier way to look at this is one person.
Yeah.
And children can change, particularly in later early childhood years, as they, you know, get closer to puberty, they transform. And certainly in adolescence, you can get these other brain problems going with the sadism and, you know, the psychopathy. And parents, some parents can have a really hard time integrating that.
I can only imagine. I remember even early on, before it even went to trial, just thinking about the dad and the mom. The mom wasn't in the spotlight as much. I just was remembering the dad and just thinking of the parents, again, that deep empathy of understanding life through that perspective. So here he was struggling. He was bullied. He was overweight. He was on drugs. He was failing at school. And then finally, through what might have been their own perception because of their parenting, because of hard work they put in, they were able to basically save their kid, you know, that he lost weight, he got healthy, he's doing kickboxing, his grades went up, they got him off of meth. I mean, all the things that they thought he was on this path, and all of a sudden it completely collapsed. It was nothing but a show, because it was all complete for nothing.
Yeah.
And so it must be extremely hard for them to accept it. How long do you think it, I know it's kind of who knows, right? But can counseling get them through that at some point?
You know, it's hard to say. Some people are just really stuck in their, it's a defense mechanism, and they're stuck in their defense mechanism. And yeah, the other thing I'll say about Sue Klebold, the way she has framed it, which comes across very clearly in her book, is that rather than saying her son Dylan was a monster and did some monstrous things. When you read the details of what he did during that shooting rampage, it was sadistic. Oh, yeah. She does not see that. She still frames him as he was depressed, and we just didn't know how depressed he was. Depression does not make people into serial killers or you know, mass right. murderers. It doesn't work that way.
It's a level of cognitive dissonance of I'm not going to absorb. I'm incapable. My brain is incapable of even pulling this in. It's like, you know, oil and water. No matter how much you try to mix them, they're just not going to mix. Is there a time, because you're trying to understand motivations of people? I'm like we just said. I'm going to guess she feels guilt about the way she raised her son, whether it was good, bad, whatever, indifferent, whatever it was. This is what you got at the end of the day. And there's sisters that turned out just fine that are successful and happy. So I don't go back to the parents and say that it was a horrible parenting situation, because I don't believe it was in the Koberger household. But is there a point where someone like Brian's mother sees that she's doing more harm than good now that the game is over, now that he's locked away, even though she thinks she's doing what's right for herself, that she's still supporting her son and feeding him? Trust me, the state will feed him. The taxpayers are already paying for that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need extra money for snacks or commissary. He can sit there and rot. But is there a point, and then when he comes out and does this little stunt, and he cites her as support and never wavering and all that bullshit, if she truly believes that he did this, and I don't know what she believes, I have no idea. One would have to guess, you probably got to look at the evidence and go, your son probably did this. Mm-hmm. If she knows in the back of her mind, my son did this, but I'm still supporting him, and she's telling herself all these lies, is there a way for her to see you are doing more harm than good? It's time to stop. Would that make them stop? Is she just not seeing that the cause and effect here? And I'm not saying that because she's giving him $150 a week in the commissary, allegedly, that that's what caused him to write this letter and try to do the appeal. I think the book did that. I think the idiotic supporters did that. I think a lot of things did that. I think she's a piece of the pie, that the family familial support is part of it. But why do you want to be a piece of that pie, Ms. Koberger? Why? What benefit does that do? If you give a shit and you're praying for these families of these victims every single day, and you truly mean what you're praying about, then why are you still giving him money for snack time? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're doing more harm than good. Mm-hmm. And she needs to see that. She needs to understand that. And she needs to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. Is there a realization there that can happen that makes somebody pull back and say, didn't think of it that way?
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a healthier position. That would be the way to go. But does she have the capacity? If she hasn't been able to do that by now, my guess is she may not have the capacity to go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm also going to balance it out a little bit. So she's putting money in commissary for him. So, yes, she's still buying money for snack time. I love that, Tony. But at the same time, though, she obviously wasn't his loving critic that he sent that letter to, and they're standing by an appeal with him. He's like standing on his own, because that obviously was not edited by mom or dad or anyone with three marbles rolling around upstairs in the brain. So she might be all in on providing snack time, but doesn't look like all in yet on forwarding and going for an appeal of any sort. That seems to be completely by him. So fingers crossed that maybe they are making progress.
Mm-hmm. It's time to bring him some gummy worms laced with antifreeze, Mom. I think that might be the appropriate snack time for little Bri.
Just give it to the guys on his cell block to handle before it gets to him and see what happens.
Yeah. There you go. See what happens.
I'd be really interested to see. I know, who knows, but what the Gonzaleses are doing to provide money to the canteens of the guys around them in that cell block still. I mean, Because I remember
where you put your money, Mom. You got to give it to his friends. Want some money? They want it for razors and toothbrushes because they want to brush their teeth and shave. That's what it's for.
You know, it would be really interesting to see and hear about what they're actually doing as a family to him from behind the scenes at some point, just because I think everyone would get, well, maybe, and maybe nothing, you know, maybe they've moved
maybe
on.
Nothing. I don't know. It's a train wreck.
We all just like Brian Kober being tortured behind the scenes. So that's,
yes, I'd love that. Would be a great pay-per-view. I'd pay for that in a heartbeat. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.